Good morning.
Morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program. When we look at migration policies and patterns, is there a fair and reasonable, you know, comparison to be made between Australia and Canada?
Yes, look, very, very similar histories. In the post-war period after the Second World War, Canada and Australia, together with US and New Zealand, were the four settler immigration countries, the countries that took in immigrants to be part of the new nation. And so we have this long tradition. And also we've got a very close link because we borrowed multiculturalism from Canada. The current Prime Minister's father, Pierre Trudeau, introduced that in Canada in the 60s to deal with the French problem, the Quebecois, and we borrowed that. And we also borrowed from them the points test system. So when people apply to come on what we call the skilled stream, they're allocated points, and we take the ones with the most points as sort of a meritocratic system. So we've got this very, very similar post-war immigration history, very, very close policy relationships between the two countries.
So narrowing down the differences, Canada's state-based immigration approach, what does that currently look like?
Well, the thing that I think that's interesting there is that from the early 90s, the Canadian government allowed the provinces, their states, to have a seat at the immigration table. It was initially Quebec, and Quebec has a unique place in Canada because of the joint French and British colonial history in Canada. And so they were given the right to set their own immigration policy, basically, to determine who should come and how to select them. And obviously they wanted French-speaking immigrants and so forth. But then the other provinces said, hey, you know, give us a go too. And the interesting thing is that, before, and it's called the Provincial Nominee Program, the PNP, so the provinces get to nominate economic migrants, or what we call skilled migrants. Before that was introduced, 74% of all immigrants to Canada went to the big three cities of Toronto, Vancouver and Montreal. Now only 61% does. So by giving the states or their provinces a seat at the table, they've been able to reduce the over-concentration of new immigrants to the big three Canadian cities. And the analogy here, of course, is the big two Australian cities of Sydney and Melbourne.
So here in Australia, just how much communication is there actually between the federal government and the state and territory governments on migration?
Look, there's very little, Sean. I mean, you know, sort of the federal government consults with everyone about immigration policy, but it runs the show. It's tried to have new visa pathways to the bush, to regional rural Australia, with some sort of limited effect. So in the last 10 or 15 years, the government's tried to sort of redirect immigrants out of Sydney and Melbourne, but that hasn't been too successful. And my argument would be that if we allowed the states to have a key role, to have a share in immigration targets, and you gave the states that particularly want more migrants, so I'm thinking South Australia, I'm thinking the Northern Territory, I'm thinking West Australia, Tasmania, and regional parts of the rest of Australia, like New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland, they want more migrants at the very same time when maybe Sydney or Melbourne, there's a big debate about whether they could take any more. So what my argument is that the Canadian experience tells us that we can settle more immigrants in Australia out of Sydney and Melbourne.
How would the government go about making sure migrants are attracted to these smaller cities and regional areas?
Yeah, so there are a number of ways of doing that. You're right, there are two key issues. One is attracting them, getting them in the first instance. And the second one is retention, getting to stay there. Because like Canada, there's no internal passport. You know, once you arrive in Australia, no matter where you arrive, first of all, you can go where you want it. So with the attraction part, there are a couple of ways. First of all, you give people more points if they settle, say, in South Australia or Northern Territory or WA or regional New South Wales. So that means that people who may not get selected to come to Australia in the first instance because they don't have enough points get another 5 or 10 points because of this agreement to settle in another area, and that then gets them past the post. So that's one strategy I think that is quite easy to administer and effective. But the other one I think is really worth considering, a new innovation, is that a lot of immigrants and certainly a lot of refugees, I've been speaking to a lot of refugee families in New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland, the key thing they, when you go into the families and speak to them about their experience, they've got people overseas left in their countries who they want to bring out and sponsor. So if you said to them, look, if you go to regional and rural towns, or if you go to states other than or places other than Sydney and Melbourne, we will give you priority in family reunion. And lots of immigrants as well that come through the permanent stream really want to get their mother or father or their sister out here. And so by giving them, putting them at the head of the queue, if you like, of the family reunion nomination process, that would be a fantastic carrot that would attract, I think, more and more people. And then once their refugees started to arrive in these places, you've got like a chain migration outside of Sydney and Melbourne that builds the population, the immigrant population and the refugee population in those areas.
Well, it sounds like a common sense approach, Jock. Thank you very much. Really do appreciate you unpacking this one for us a bit.
A pleasure, Sean.